to collective changes. And those two are very much related, according to him. Every individual is part of a social system. So you have your own future and you have l'avenir of the social system. And paraphrasing Auger, he believes that only in a completely totalitarian condition, the individual and the future are totally subordinated to collective roads to a new dawn, like in North Korea. According to this line of reasoning, utopias are definitely closer to the totalitarian corner, much more than to the individual one. And they are not so much about the future, which is a continuation of the present, but they are about a new age, a new era, a new order. Typical for new eras, new orders, new ages, is the habit to start numbering again, like it was done for a short period of time after the French Revolution, for instance, when 1789 became, in retrospect, the year one of liberty. And this era, which officially started in the year three, ended already in the year five. At the same time, a new revolutionary calendar was introduced simultaneously in France, with new names for the 12 months, and each month was consisting of 3 weeks of 10 days. And this lasted until 1805, when Napoleon abolished it. And likewise, in Italian fascism, they started anew with 1922, the year that Mussolini seized power with the march to Rome that became year one of the fascist era. There are visionary plans that are no more than that, visions of the future as it could be. And on the other hand, utopian plans propose a future as it should be. And I think this is a fundamental, fundamental issue. There is a distinction between the extrapolation of what's already there and the more or less revolutionary transformation, a difference between continuation and change. This distinction between a possible future and a preferred future is the same as the difference between a more or less descriptive worldview and a prescriptive ideology. And having said this, with my strict definition, most plans, I believe also most plans which we'll see in the rest of the evening, are more visions than extrapolations of the present into a feasible future than utopias, a total makeover of society and their built shape. If you look at the history of utopias, the projects which are described as utopian, then you can see that there are some, let's say, characteristics, common characteristics. They tend to be large, both in their scale and in their impact. Right now there's kind of fashionable interest in doing good by small scale interventions that might have a big impact. And I'm not sure if those, let's say, spatial agencies can have a utopian potential. They are idealistic for sure, just as utopias are, but they do not impose the same level of forced change that is inherent to utopias and to totalitarian societies, where no matter how, people are forced to change their lifestyle. Like here in the place with the marvelous name New Harmony, which was actually built on a smaller scale in different places in the United States. You could say that there is maybe a gliding scale. There are extreme utopias and there are future visions. Most of the projects which are described either as visionary or as utopian are somewhere in between. So there's a gliding scale from vision to utopia, which is also a gliding scale from forecasting and extrapolations to alternatives, from possible to preferable futures, from open prototypes to fixed models, from ideas about the future to ideals and ideology, from progress to change. Visions can be individual and about individuals. Utopias are by definition about collectives. And utopias need an explicit ideology, which is, by consequence, you could say, because it's an ideology about society, much more often left-wing than right-wing in political terms, simply because that political left, in its traditional sense of the word, is dealing more with collectives and societies and less with individuals. Every extrapolation of the present can lead to failure, but sometimes they succeed. However, utopias defined as this ideology-driven, prescriptive alternative for the present, they are bound to fail in their realization, in the double sense of the word, both in their organization and in their function, but also, in most cases, in their actual construction. So maybe the best utopias are those that are not realized, or only partially, like the imperfect and incomplete archaeological remains of ancient Greece, which are much more fascinating than a complete, clean statue could ever be. Whenever they are partially realized, utopias can maintain their promise, which you cannot sense and experience when they are ever fully realized. And there again, you have this duality between utopia and utopia. Strange thing is that if you look at projects which are described as utopia, they often look very much like commercial projects like this Palm Island in Dubai. Just as there is a large similarity between utopian projects and the so-called privatopia of gated communities. Biggest difference is the image might be the same, but the social impact is totally different. In the case of utopia, it's suggested that it's inclusive, in the sense that there is an ambition to become the norm for the whole society, while in the case of privatopia, there's always this aim to remain exclusive. Starting with Thomas More, utopia is an island. And this is, by the way, the island, the themed island for the Real Madrid resort in the Middle East. Utopia is an island, isolated from the rest of the world. It's here, but also in this project of Leon Krier, Atlantis, which was supposed to be built on the island of Tenerife. Or it can be an island in the desert, like this project by Paolo Solieri Arcosanti. Another aspect of all those utopian projects is that they tend to be autarkic, self-sufficient. Maybe sometimes on an extreme scale, like here, with this exploration unit for the NASA, both in its test case on the top and in the Lego version down. Nature. Islands are natural environments, and most utopias are set in nature, in a natural setting. So there's always this idyllic aspect to it, which you can see here as well, this low quality image of a proposal from the 1970s of a NASA-inspired vision for life in space, outer space, where you see this green landscape in the center of this enormous ring. The images are pretty much the same as in many utopias, but I think this NASA vision is not utopian, because it's a sort of continuation of life on Earth with different means and in different circumstances. Which brings me to another aspect, that is, visions for the future very much rely on technology. Utopias deal with human relations, and only a few ones, like the famous New Babylon project of Constant, there you see that there's a kind of combination of this technological part and this societal part. Technology often plays a role, for instance, in the project of Buckminster Fuller, who proposed to create domes on an enormous scale, big enough to cover parts of Manhattan. There is a relation with science fiction, which I will not explore here, and there's also another very interesting relation between utopia and dystopia, which is often explored in science fiction. The negative effect of technology is something which is described in books, which is depicted in movies. But the strange thing is, if you look at the architecture of dystopia, it's pretty often quite close to the utopian version. The definition of dystopia as a society in a repressive and controlled state is often under the guise of being utopian, is very much presented in other art forms than architecture. And the guise is obvious. The difference between utopia and dystopia is often hardly visible. The only difference you could see is the change of colors, the disappearance of blue and green, and the appearance of brown and gray. For the rest, they are pretty close. Another issue of many utopian projects, or projects which are supposed to be utopian, is that the use of the images are reused without the content. There's a kind of postmodern interpretation of many utopian projects which are totally devoid of their original meaning, like what happened with the work of Superstudio. Sometimes there is this claim for this total autonomy of architecture, but I suspect it's the perversion of the original utopian intention. It's a bit like how nowadays Manfredo Tafuli, the famous Italian historian, is abused. His notion of operative criticism and operative history is transformed in something which he surely disliked. If I understood his writings well, he was actually against any form of operative criticism. But if you read nowadays, let's say, fans of Tafuli, they all claim that operative criticism is the best thing to do. In the same way, the polemical and very pessimistic images of Superstudio, like this one, has turned into a kind of carefree, happy interpretation. Here you see one of these, in my opinion, carefree interpretations of Superstudio, and here another one recently made. Looking at utopias of the past, and I'm getting close to that I believe we should be happy that in most cases they haven't become reality, or only partially, so that they can maintain their romantic promise. When they are realized, they often turn out to be pretty scary. Even when I visited Arco Santi, this ongoing project of Soleri in the desert of Arizona, I felt like being immersed in a religious sect with Paolo Soleri as its messiah. When I was there, I had the pleasure to join him for a dinner with some of his, let's say, loyal servants. And nobody was able to drink wine except Mr. Soleri himself. There was no alcohol allowed, he was drinking wine. And for me, this was a kind of signal of this perversion of this ideal of creating an ideal society in the desert of Arizona. And it's no coincidence that this famous Familistère in Guise, the north of France, which was conceived by Jean-Baptiste André Gaudin and based on the ideas of the famous utopian thinker Charles Fourier, reminds of a prison. A prison and something like this Familistère is based on the idea of being a total institution, to use the notion of the sociologist Erwin Goffman. On the other hand, I think we should appreciate the utopian ambition which you can find in many projects of the past, the ambition to bring about change. And that is maybe more valuable than the current speculative projections of possible futures, which do not make a better world, but at best makes this world a bit better. Of course, they are definitely more realistic than any utopian dream, but exactly this realism, this absence of dreams, reveal a fundamental shortcoming. So to conclude, the road to hell might be paved with failed futures, but hell itself is filled with all those realistic plans that fail to bring change and fail to offer a better world.
Thank you, Hans. So How then from this analysis would you assess more mundane project like the Bijlmermeer, for example? Does that fit into your categorization? Is that hell or is it purgatory? What's that?
There were some ambitions to change society in that, so it's failed in the sense that the utopian aspect was not able to be realized. So in that sense, I appreciate the ambition of the Bijlmermeer.
You'll be sticking around, right? You'll be here the entire evening and joining us later for the discussion. Now we move on to Edwin Gardner. Oh, it's Gardner, right? You're Australian, yeah, Australian background. Architect by training, but now primarily working as a writer, web editor, slash a lot of other things, curator, design researcher, writing for Volume magazine, participating, collaborating with artists, and researcher at the Van Eyck Academy. Is it going to survive? The funding cuts, yeah, okay. Good, and just recently you found Monet. Hopefully you will talk a bit about that as well. And I will give you the floor, and we have to switch laptops, right? Gardner.
Can I also have sound?
By the way, this melodic sound you hear here in the front, it's the 3D printer that this brought. And later on we will get an explanation, but it sounds actually pretty nice. And I like it in the background.
So yes, hello. I'll just start. Vincent Schipper, Christian Fruneau, and I have recently founded Monik as a platform where to gather our research interests. Our work plays out at the interface between culture, technology, and consciousness. Together, technology and culture compose the man-made world to which consciousness has to relate itself. Technology extends the reach of man on the world. My reach is it's a very good illustration of my